Imagine walking down a city street in early summer and spotting a small tree laden with deep purple berries. Most people walk past without noticing this abundance hanging just above eye level. But these service berries, also called Juneberries, Shadbush, or Bozakmen, the best of berries in Potawatomi, offer more than just food. They provide a complete blueprint for reimagining our relationship with the natural world and our economic systems. These remarkable berries appear across North America, their white spring blossoms signaling nature's calendar more reliably than any human schedule. By June, branches hang heavy with fruit that feeds not just humans, but birds, bears, and countless other creatures. Their taste, wild and complex, like blueberry crossed with apple, touched with hints of rosewater and almond, cannot be mass-produced or shipped across continents. It speaks of specific soils, weather patterns, and ecological relationships that connect us directly to place and season. What would happen if we approach these berries not as resources to be exploited, but as gifts freely given? This shift in perspective changes everything about our relationship with food and the natural world. Each handful represents not just sustenance, but connection to land, season, and countless generations who gathered these fruits before us. Indigenous cultures built economies on gratitude, recognizing finite resources and ecological responsibilities. Their focus wasn't on maximum extraction, but on sustainable renewal. In these traditions, gratitude transcends mere thanks. It's a deep acknowledgement of our dependence on Earth's generosity. Service berries exemplify this web of relationships between soil, pollinators, and humans that creates natural abundance. This principle could transform our modern economy. When gratitude helps us recognize enoughness, our drive for endless acquisition fades. We protect and preserve what we truly appreciate. The indigenous honorable harvest principle, take only what's needed, use everything taken, minimize harm, and reciprocate, wasn't just a rule, but a moral foundation connecting communities to their life sources. Unlike one-time market transactions, gift reciprocity creates ongoing exchanges that flow through communities in complex networks. When I share service berry jam with neighbors, they might later help tend the patch, teach foraging, or offer different gifts. Each exchange strengthens community bonds. This mirrors nature cycles, where materials like carbon move from atmosphere to berry to bird to soil and back, creating abundance through circular flow. Energy transforms and passes along in various forms, with nothing wasted. In a service berry economy, status derives from generosity rather than accumulation. The currency is relationship, expressed through gratitude and reciprocity. Traditional ceremonies like Potawatomi giveaways and Pacific Northwest potlatches exemplified this through feasts of generous giving, practices colonial governments banned in the 1800s as contrary to civilized accumulation. Ecology and economy share the Greek root oikos, home, yet modern thinking has separated these life-sustaining systems. Gift economies keep them unified, where wealth means having enough to share. As one indigenous hunter said of not storing excess meat, "I store my meat in the belly of my brother." While capitalist security relies on individual accumulation, gift economies find security in community bonds and mutual care. Gift economies exist alongside our transaction-based world, often in simple forms like neighbors sharing garden surplus on free tables. This practice tends to spread, creating informal neighborhood exchange networks. These acts form a genuine economy based on abundance and sharing. Gift economies emerge naturally during crises like Hurricane Sandy, the 2011 Japan earthquake, and the COVID-19 pandemic, when people instinctively pool resources and form mutual aid networks. While modern economics assumes we act as rational economic man, purely self-interested individuals, evidence shows humans naturally lean toward cooperation and generosity. This manifests in contemporary gift economies like free cycling networks, repair cafes, free stores, and digital spaces like open source software, Wikipedia, and educational content sharing. Each act of giving strengthens these alternative networks. We already live in a mixed economy rather than a purely free market one. The question is how gift economies can thrive alongside capitalism, addressing needs markets fail to meet. Libraries exemplify gift economies at civic scale, where books are common property, requiring only respect for shared resources. Parks and public spaces, funded by pooled taxes, represent similar community investments. Nordic cuddly capitalism extends this to healthcare, education, and sustainability, achieving higher happiness despite higher taxation. Gift economies face challenges from those who violate trust, relating to the tragedy of the commons theory. However, Eleanor Ostrom's Nobel Prize-winning research proved that collective action and cooperation can successfully sustain shared resources, challenging conventional economic wisdom. The strength of gift economies may lie in their small-scale nature, as demonstrated by the Little Free Library movement, where neighborhood book sharing builds community through literary exchange. Service berries exemplify reciprocity over accumulation, where wealth emerges from relationships. Their survival depends on gift relationships with bees and birds. The berries must be eaten to spread, and nutrients must cycle through the ecosystem. Hoarding fails, mutual flourishing prevails. In this gift economy, abundance flows through the community. Birds eating berries spread seeds while providing natural fertilizer, creating a network that benefits all participants. This interconnected system particularly supports immobile beings like trees. Ecologists now challenge competition as evolution's main driver, seeing cooperation as more beneficial for group success. Forest studies reveal underground networks where trees share resources and information. As Richard Powers states, "You cannot compete in a zero-sum game with creatures upon whom your existence depends." The real threat of scarcity stems from capitalism's endless growth model, where consumption exceeds Earth's regenerative capacity. The gift economy offers an alternative to this system that commodifies everything while depleting our sense of belonging, relationship, and purpose. Our current economic system operates through a destructive cycle of extraction, manufacture, use, and disposal. Yet alternatives exist, starting with what feminist economists call the maternal gift economy, where care is freely given without expectation of payment. Earth's gifts could be viewed similarly, fostering community rather than mere commodity exchange. Ecological succession offers a model for transition. Like pioneer species that eventually give way to more sustainable communities, we need both incremental change and creative disruption. The intersection of old and new economies resembles ecological ecotones, diverse and productive spaces where transformation happens. While market capitalism will persist, we can cultivate parallel gift economies that provide what we truly need: meaningful relationships and recognition of our contributions. As Charles Eisenstein notes, money may not disappear anytime soon, but it will serve a diminished role. The economy will shrink and our lives will grow. Hope lies in grassroots movements, neighbors creating common spaces and sharing resources. When we view Earth's offerings as gifts rather than commodities, we become better stewards. Regenerative economies that honor and reciprocate Earth's gifts are essential, a lesson embodied by the service berry.